You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora, my name is Jamie Hanton, and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Based in central Christchurch since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to achieve a higher level of professional and creative development and encourage a greater acknowledgement, understanding, and value of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. Welcome to episode 14 of Art Not Science. In this episode, we are sharing the High Street Histories Walking Tour, a public program that accompanies Eddie Clemens' exhibition, Kiosk, Director's Commentary. Eddie's exhibition explores the history and mysterious disappearance of the kiosk, a small, self-contained exhibition space that operated between 2000 and 2010 on the corner of Manchester, Lichfield and High Streets in Christchurch's city centre. Acting as an extension of the physics room at ground level, the kiosk was one of many spaces that made the area a vibrant hub for the arts community, comprising public and artist-run spaces, as well as dealer galleries. In this episode, you will hear from artists, directors, and curators who were and are involved with past and future art spaces located on and around High Street. Louise Palmer of the High Street Project, Helen Calder of 6403, Grant Bambury of Campbell Grant Galleries, Lee Richardson and Liam Kriegsman of Hot Lunch. Physics Room Access Coordinator Audrey Baldwin will be your tour host. Stay tuned to hear insights and origin stories, art historical facts and tidbits, as well as the highs and lows of setting up and running these spaces.
Kia ora koutou, everyone. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. If you don't know where you're at the High Street Histories Tour, which has been put on by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space. So thank you so much for venturing outside of the gallery and joining us. We're going to do a bit of a ghost city tour, essentially, because a lot of the things that we're talking about are obviously no longer around us. My name's Audrey Baldwin. I am the Access Coordinator for the Physics Room. So again, thank you so much for joining us today. You're not just going to be hearing from me today, but I'm going to give you a brief introduction to what we're up to with this tour. Basically, this area, this three-block radius, has actually had a really important role in the cultural development of Otatahi for many years. At the very beginning, High Street was plotted by Edward Jolly, and that was in order to allow direct access to Sumner way in that direction, as well as to the Littleton and Ferrymead areas. High Street is one of the only two diagonally running streets in the Christchurch central city, alongside Victoria Street. So it really disrupts the traditional grid format that we have. Originally, the triangles and these little garden beds formed by each of the intersections served for essential services such as water troughs, wells, and the city's first taxi stand. In more recent times, they've been kind of converted into providing inner city recreational spaces. There've been fountains, the old Stuart fountain down by old KFC back in the day, as well as for plantings like these flower beds that have been around for decades, and seating, as I am standing on here. I'm not sure if anyone else remembers the old Hack Circle, which used to be where Glassons and H&M is now. That was very much the space for teenagers and hacky sack players back in the day. Some of you might have binged on KFC at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night, maybe, just me. So I can confirm that these were in fact bustling recreational spaces for a variety of social gatherings. So High Street was actually originally called Sumner Road, kind of in honor of the tram that went all the way out to Sumner until up to the 1950s when the trams were kind of disestablished as actual modes of transport and became tourist traps instead. The name actually got changed to High Street because it had all the major businesses on it. So there used to be ANZ building on that corner there, Ballantyne's is at the other end, and the Strangers building was another real hub for activity. Over time, the areas definitely had ups and downs. Started off as a commercial centre, went through a bit of a decline in the 70s and 80s, had another kind of bustling as the red light district in the 90s, but also was a really key site for the 90s Christchurch rave scene. And I guess there was a millennial regeneration of it into a boutique shopping and dining area. There used to be affordable cold apartments and studio spaces for artists and young people. All down Manchester Street, there were the Hypara apartments on High Street. So there was a real mix of people from suits to skateboarders. Across the way there used to be the Excelsior Hotel, so that was like a sports bar and a hotel, which added another social dynamic to the space. There were so many galleries around here as well. Not only the kiosk, which used to be over there, there used to be just down Bedford Row, which I don't think exists as a street anymore, there used to be Space Gallery, that shared a foyer and a lift with the local swingers club, Club EC. There was also the iconic Jonathan Smart Gallery, which was on High Street upstairs. That's obviously now relocated, first of all to Linwood. It shared Neil Dawson's studio post-quake, and now it's in its new home in Sydenham. There was also the High Street Project, which had multiple locations around this area, but always kind of stayed within the same stomping ground. Louise Palmer is going to talk more in detail about High Street Project. There was also, aligned with High Street, there was Marsupial Gallery, which was in another brick building that backed onto the old Goodbye Blue Monday. There was Brooke Gifford Gallery, which we'll probably go into a bit more depth as well. That was run by Judy Gifford and Barbara Brooks, opened in 1975 in an ex-motorbike shop upstairs. That building is still standing. It's very derelict now. It's a bit sad, especially as it was one of the first dealer galleries to operate for more than a year in Christchurch, and it ran until about 2011. And then also on Manchester Street, there was Andre Hemmer's studio, which also operated as an artist space for a short time. And I've been trying to sift through the internet to find the name of that, but so much of this information is all in oral histories and blurry, wine-fueled memories of the arts community. Also just around this corner, there used to be Soul Square. There was a sports club called His Lordship's Lane, and there was also a little window-based gallery called Gilt. Again, I don't know who started that gallery. I'm still trying to remember. It ran for about a year. And then, of course, there was the old physics room. We used to be based in the old post office building, where C1 now is on the ground floor. And we were in there from 1999 all the way through to 2018, except for a couple of years where we were in Sydenham temporarily. As you can imagine, with all of the artists and brothels and cool kids around, gentrification came in. That started around the early 2000s. And I think for me, what really counted as gentrification was when they got rid of Inspirations, my favourite crystal shop on the corner, and World moved in instead. So there was this beautiful high fashion, no more Nag Champer scents drifting down High Street. There was also Soul Square across the way, as well as new fancy apartments being built. And I guess also as part of the redevelopment of the area, there were new laneways started up. Poplar Lane hosted the Twisted Hot, Michelli's Cafe, a Russian vodka bar, a karaoke bar with delicious Korean alcohol. And of course, Goodbye Blue Monday, which was the precursor to Smash Palace. And that was kind of like a communal lounge for a lot of creatives at the time. Right here where we're standing, this beautiful new build here, which Grant has told me is 150% of the earthquake rebuild strength. This used to be Java, a 24-hour cafe. It was known for its giant cookies, psychedelic ceiling mural, and it was also kind of, I'm not going to lie, the best place to buy acid or mushrooms day or night. So gives you a bit of context. So the kiosk was here. It was a really brave little outpost for public art. Because it was really busy, there were all sorts of people going backwards and forwards, and there was just this bastion offering challenging contemporary art 24 hours to the uninitiated masses. So I was one of the tow-rag teenagers that hung out there. We used to binge drink, and that's part of the reason there's now an alcohol ban in the centre of city. Soz guys. For me personally, the kiosk was one of the main ways that I engaged with contemporary art. I was way too anxious to go into dealer galleries, into artist-run spaces, and so the fact that the kiosk brought that to me has actually, without me realising it at the time, been hugely influential on my own practice and my own approach to public art, and probably heaps of other people as well. Fast forward to 2011, and the kiosk was temporarily to be uplifted by the council to make way for these new fancy tram tracks. The fancy tram tracks were part of a plan to extend the tram down the laneway as part of the Rugby World Cup fancification of the area. Obviously, that got a bit waylaid during the earthquakes, and since then, we don't know where the kiosk is on. It was put into storage. During the research for Eddie Clemens' show that's on at the moment, we were trying to find out what happened to it. Nobody knows. it really did go on a voyage to the future or to like a scrap metal yard, who knows. So aside from me just ranting on about my blurry memories, I'm really, really grateful to have some speakers who are going to talk about three past spaces and a future one, and hopefully some little tidbits of other information that you can't glean on the internet. So we're going to have Louise Palmer, who is the sculpture lecturer, amazing artist, and doing scape and all sorts of exciting things this year. So she's going to start us off talking about High Street Project. That's going to be followed by Grant Banbury, who I'm sure we all know from art, writing, general presence, who's going to talk about his gallery and studio space at Campbell Grant Gallery. And then we've got Helen Calder, who is going to talk to us about 6403, which you sold me my first artwork. I don't know if you remember, I was terrified, but at 6403, that was a dealer space down on Manchester Street. And then rounding us out and preventing us all from just being stuck in the past, we have Lee Richardson, who is going to talk to us a bit about a new space, which is going to be leading the foray back into High Street, Hot Lunch, which is just behind us. So I'm going to be quiet for a bit. I'm going to hand over to Louise. And also, if you're wanting to ask any questions, we'll kind of do that after each block segment, I think, just to keep things vaguely timely. Awesome.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Louise Palmer is up first to talk about the history of the High Street Project.
Thanks a lot for your intro, Audrey. I feel like I've had two lives in Christchurch. And my first life in Christchurch was when I was an art school student in the 90s. And when I say that, I can already imagine the students in the classes I teach kind of rolling their eyes as I wistfully reminisce about how great everything was in the 90s. Art school was a really important time for me. And it is, you know, teaching, I can kind of recognise that it's a really seminal time for lots of artists. And at the time I was at art school, there was a really close connection with the High Street Project. So I'm definitely looking back at the High Street Project with rose-tinted glasses. And I can sort of look back and talk about how engaged we all were, how close-knit we were, what an amazing community it was. But then there were also the kind of disagreements, inconsistencies, anxieties, upsets and heartaches that go with any kind of scene or any group of young people. From my understanding, High Street opened in the very early 90s, so 1991 or 1992, and Grant or Helen might have more detail on that. That was probably before I even came to Christchurch, and it was on this stretch of High Street here, above Michael's restaurant. And Michael's was probably like the only fine dining restaurant in the city. So you walked up a staircase and it was this upstairs space, a few doors down from where Jonathan Smart used to be. And some of the people that I knew associated with the High Street Project in those very early days, and I started going to openings there maybe when I was in my first or second year at art school, and was always quite intimidated by that scene and artists who were more successful and slightly older than me. I became more involved in the High Street Project in my third and fourth year of art school. Fiona Gunn, who was a lecturer in the School of Fine Arts, had prior experience with artist-run spaces in Sydney, and she brought that experience to Christchurch. She became part of the High Street Project Trust. I think she was seminal in actually getting a trust and a board set up. And she asked students to be engaged. That was 1996 and 97 when I was finishing off art school. And there was always a director or a curator of the High Street Project. And it was run on next to no money. But there was, you know, enough money to sustain a full-time job. But that was subsidised through Project Green, if anyone remembers that. That was subsidised through the doll, that's what we referred to it as. So Violet Fagan was the director when I had my first show there in 1995, six, and that was part of a series of exhibitions called Identikit. And I've got some catalogues here that I can pass around. When we became a trust, the model for funding was to propose and curate a six-month program of exhibitions. We would have funding for a catalogue that would accompany them, and these catalogues were the sort of the record of those spaces. So High Street moved further down High Street where Ara now is, and it was a really old building. I think High Street was probably there for a couple of years, and there was a program of exhibitions there. And when I left art school and became even more closely involved, it moved again to a site which is on the corner of Colombo, Hereford and High Street, so still in the High Street area. By that time I'd left art school, and Fiona Gunn, who was still quite closely involved, had shoulder tapped me and suggested that I would be a good person to step in as the next director. And I did that in collaboration with another woman, a peer of mine at art school, Georgina West, and we set about getting this space on that corner there, gallery ready. So it was above a photography shop and a jeweller. We were on the third floor. There were a series of rooms, including offices and a lift space, which became an exhibition space. And I oversaw 3 6-month programs of exhibitions, one of which, Lots, was a series of exhibitions that were collaborations between artists. And the other one, From Here, which was a series of exhibitions where artists from Christchurch who had left New Zealand and gone overseas were invited to curate an exhibition and come back and show the work that was being made by people that I'd met in communities in other parts of the world. So Jo Moore from Dusseldorf came back and set up the Dusseldorf Artists Archive, which was an exhibition that had been shown in Dusseldorf as well, and a way to introduce the Christchurch arts community to a range of work being made by young artists in Dusseldorf. I'm just thinking, who else? Jason Mayling, a performance artist who was based in London. He set up this fantastically crazy project, Project George, which took place over a number of months as an ongoing performance. I curated a series of exhibitions, and we also had an artist from Glasgow curate a series of exhibitions. And I think we applied for CNZ funding, which was what seems like a tiny, tiny amount for the ambition of a program like that and flying artists in from overseas. But I guess we were doing what we knew, and kind of, while we were ambitious in some way, it was still pretty grassroots. And we relied on the community around High Street for support, including the ongoing gallery related things like painting walls and like cleaning the space. We managed to get funding from Bex Beer, which was actually, it doesn't sound like a big thing now, but it was then. It was this really exciting thing because Bex were associated with the YBAs in London, and it was the first time there was like a big international brand like Bex selling stuff here, which really ages me. But we got sponsorship from them, and that really added to extending the community, and the openings became a pretty big deal in terms of large groups of people and us being able to sort of be very hospitable towards that. One of the other things that was really important for High Street was the connections with other artist-run spaces that were opening up around the same time. So Test Strip in Auckland opened prior to the High Street project, but at the same time that I was working at High Street on that site down there, the Honeymoon Suite opened in Dunedin, and that was run by a young artist, Emma Bugden, and Warren Olds, who's a designer, and Jonathan Nicol. There was Fiat Lux in Auckland, which was run by David Townsend, a performance artist, and Megan Dunn, who's a writer. And Room, which is still going and has had various iterations, but the first Room started in that time in the late 1990s, probably 97 or 8. So we were engaging with artists from those galleries who were sending us proposals for exhibitions and showing in the gallery or showing in the lift space program. And the lift space, because it was literally a lift space and quite small, was maybe run a little bit more informally than the other exhibitions, so there was a faster turnaround of artists. And it was really good for the community in Christchurch to see work that was being made in other areas. I especially remember the work by David and Megan, which was in the series Lots, so it was a collaboration. And they just sent this bunch of stuff that kind of arrived right before the opening or very late. And there was a piñata, and in the pinata was this little ET doll, and they requested that they have Polaroids taken of everybody at the opening with this little ET doll. So it was kind of performance, it was kind of grungy, and it was really, really different to the work that was being made at Ilam, which was a really positive thing. It was a really good thing to kind of extend beyond the arts community in Christchurch. There were a few other project spaces that popped up around that time. When I finished at the High Street Project in 1999 and left and did what a lot of my peers did and went to London, the High Street Project was already seen as becoming an institution and becoming maybe a bit boring and stale because of that. We'd had our regular six-monthly CNZ funding. We were putting in project proposals. We were having series of exhibitions and producing the catalogue. Maybe some of the cool younger artists saw that as a little bit old hat. So some of them set up another gallery in response to how they perceived the High Street Project. Dan Arps and Emma Bugden set up a gallery, SWAB Presents, SWAB being an acronym for Some Wanky Art Bastard, and that was in what was my old studio space, which was adjacent to the High Street Project in that space on the third floor on the corner. David Hatcher set up a project space in what was an old refrigerated cool store called Casco, and that was just in by the tower where Smash Palace is, a building that's now been demolished. But he ran this really slick series of exhibitions. He had 42 Below sponsorship, which we all thought was really incredibly sophisticated, and he had maybe six or seven exhibitions of artists who were predominantly senior students at the School of Fine Arts, and David was at that time as well. So that's an overview of my time and experience at High Street. Yeah, I guess I'd just say then my second life in Christchurch has been returning here to start teaching at the university. And that's when High Street was on Litchfield Street here and in the Cotters Lane area. And there were some really great shows there as well.
Thank you.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
We now have Grant Bambury discussing Brooke Gifford Gallery, as well as Campbell Grant Galleries, a space he ran for over a decade.
Come right in, everybody. Probably one of the most useful things first is to talk a little bit about my background and why I might want to talk about this particular facility. I'm actually not born in Christchurch, I'm born in Tokoroa, although I grew up here in Christchurch. Came to Christchurch when I was four in 1961. There was no doubt that I was going to go to art school. There was no other alternative as far as I was concerned, and I went to Canterbury University to study painting in 1976. That was when there was an old art school on Ilam Road side. And I had my honours year, because it was not a full degree then. My honours year was in 1979. And I had my honours exhibition in this building. As Audrey has already said, the Brooke Gifford was started in 1975. And for those of you that don't know anything about Barbara Brooke was dynamic. At this stage, she had black hair, and Helen will remember this, she had a grey streak here. She was full of figure and she wore these very sexy tight skirts. You would have loved her, Audrey. And she was steeped in the visual arts here. Her husband, Andre Brooke, was a painter. By the time they started this gallery, she was separated from Andre. And she was in business with a woman called Judith Gifford. Judith Gifford is still alive in Christchurch around about early 80s. And her husband was a very well-known Christchurch painter called Quentin McFarland. Quentin McFarland very sadly died last year, aged 83. He's a graduate of Canterbury. He did some teaching there when I was there as a student. So the history of this gallery is that connection to Judith's husband, who you might say was right in there doing it. Very tragically, Barbara dies of cancer 5 years after the gallery started in 1980. And I'll just tell you this because it's quite a potent thing. I went I started going there when I was at Boys High, and I can remember the first artwork that I bought was from a group show in 1975, and I debated whether I was going to buy a Quentin McFarlane painting or a Ralph Hotory work on paper. I bought the Ralph Hotory work on paper, about that big, for $90. It was probably quite a lot of money when I'm a school kid. Returning back to the gallery, I was in there one day, this is around about 1980, and Barbara collapsed in front of me. She fell from her chair onto the floor, and of course we all rushed around and made sure she was all right, and it was the beginning of her situation with cancer, which took her life very sadly when she was in her early 50s. And I can remember an exhibition opening, and from memory it was a group show of minimalist artists, and I think the only time that somebody like Mirkusich was shown here, and Barbara was in a wheelchair in the final stages of her life. What is really interesting is that apart from the CSA Gallery, now known to many of you as COCA, of course was a facility that showed a wide range of artists, both amateur and professional, if you like. When the Brookgivet opened in 1975, it was the first opportunity perhaps to have an independent business that was much more focused on an individual presentation, and therefore was removing in a way some of the issues that existed for artists to be shown with so-called amateurs. So in a way, that's the sort of background to it. The business showed artists from throughout New Zealand, people like Ralph Hotory, people like Patrick Hanley, who of course trained at Canterbury, was a friend of Quentin's, and it showed emerging artists like myself. Now, I worked at the CSA Gallery when I was a student, and I knew that if I wanted to have a painting career, I needed to be showing in a dealer gallery and not in an art society facility. So although I was working there, I approached them, and in a sense, that's how I got to show there. And that process, in a way, existed for all of its time. And we can look at people like Shane Cotton, Peter Robinson, Seraphine Pick, who are artists that some of you are going to know about, whose careers started here because there was nowhere else in the city. So they did bring artists from all over New Zealand, and they did show a wide range of things. People like Barry Cleven, for example, printmaker. They were showing sculpture as well, but perhaps a little bit less. And it's a great credit to Judith Gifford that 5 years after her partner died, she carried it on until, as Audrey said, the earthquake changed everything. There are some quite wonderful photographs that exist of people like Chris Pohl, who works at the Christchurch Art Gallery, carrying works out at the time of the earthquake. To me, when I see the site, I find it emotionally quite disturbing that this facility has got to this state. And if we're going to think about Christchurch and its rebuild, I feel like saying, why don't you pull it down? Why do we have to look at this when I have all these strong memories of just hundreds of shows that were in that gallery? And I would have to credit that to myself becoming an art collector. If anybody's got any questions they would like to ask about it, I'm happy to respond.
Was the doorway just on the far right hand side, like behind the post hoc?
Yeah, the post hoc is where it was. Originally you entered on the ground floor, and I can remember it was a second hand shop. You went in and there were stairs within that retail outlet to take you upstairs. Then ultimately they turned the stairs to face out to the street, and it developed a separate situation. Judith Gifford was seen often as a very removed woman, a very quiet woman who perhaps people felt in some ways was not necessarily so connected with it. And I'd just like to say that in a way that isn't the facts of the matter, because under that facade was, I always think, a very astute woman who knew how to handle people in a very gentle manner. I think the Dealer Gallery is seen post this, if you look at the rest of New Zealand, at times is a very different beast than it was during this sort of time. So I don't know who owns the building, and it's very, very interesting for that gallery from 1975 to 2010 and 11, to remain in the one facility. Listen to what Louise has just talked about, in which you've got this rotational movement of all sorts of spaces, and that is very rare. Peter McClevey might be one of the others that have lasted out in one facility. There are all sorts of reasons for moving and changing, and you'll find a lot of dealer galleries across New Zealand might move two or three times.
So how many shows would she put on a year, Brad?
Well, generally it was a 2 or 3 week turnaround. It had two spaces. In here you can see the racks that have been built. That was the office space with some racks, one big rectangular room, and then a smaller room off it. And sometimes they would present two shows.
Upstairs only, is that right?
Upstairs only. And I can remember one of the very interesting artists that was never really shown in Christchurch, although he lived here for a long time, was Gordon Walters. And Gordon Walters was this just very straightforward, lovely man to meet. He wore denim jeans, and I can remember I've got a snapshot I took of him at the gallery here, and he showed very rarely here. He never had a solo show here, but I find it very interesting for such an important New Zealand artist to live in Christchurch for a 20-year period and not actually be exposed and shown. Partly maybe his decision, but it means, of course, that some of those major artists' works didn't get into the public collection.
How did you go from art school and then up to having your studios and opening Campbell Brown?
Okay, I decided, one of the really interesting things going to, and we should have Jonathan Smart here, there is another artist in New Zealand who has a similar surname to me. Those of you in the art world will know who I mean, and those of you that don't, won't. Most people want their surname spelt correctly, and mine is B-A-N-B-U-R-Y. Stephen Banbury, the artist, is B-A-M. So Stephen Banbury was having an exhibition at Jonathan Smart Gallery, I can't remember what year, and so I made these signs. They're very beautiful. They're about that big, they're on card, and they had correct spelling of my name and the correct spelling of his name. They're beautifully wrapped up, and I met him, hadn't met him, just handed them to him like this, and he opened them, and we had these photographs taken of him and I. And early on, of course, we were both painting. My work had become quite minimalist, although working very much in a mixed media way, quite different to his. People today come up to me and say, "Hello, Stephen." You think it's not an issue, and it isn't. He's quite a lot taller than me, and we are quite different people, but you know, you do want your name right. And I go somewhere and people say, "Oh yes, you know, I collected your work," and they're talking about Stephen. Quite an interesting little side issue. That is why my gallery didn't have my surname in it, and Grant is my middle name. So it was called Campbell Grant, and it's galleries plural, I-E-S. So it first had a facility on the corner of Litchfield and Madras, so behind that big tall building. Its end wall is there, and its second site, see this building here, this brick building? The blue wall over there was the side of the gallery, and the end wall of the facility is still there. So I was in business with my brother Bruce, who's a Christchurch architect, and his wife Janine. I was the main person in the gallery, and we decided the facility here was a little bit like the Brook of It initially. You went through a downstairs retail space, you went upstairs, and after a number of years I decided that we would move it. So it opened in 97, and I decided that I'd stop my painting career in 92. My then partner had died that year, and I decided that I would leave Christchurch, and I went to Melbourne and I did a post-year grad in art curation. I came back to Christchurch in 1995, and the following year co-curated an exhibition on one of my tutors at art school called Doris Lusk. Mid-century modernist painter, landscape painter, very well known here. So that was the most major curatorial thing that I've done. Then decided I'd open up a business, and my brother approached me, which was a big surprise to me, and said, let's go into the business together. So started in 97 and then moved here in 2002. It was an upstairs facility. It was a big wooden open space like that. And I can remember Miles Warren came in, Christchurch architect, and he said, you'll be bloody cold in here, Grant. The roof was not lined, and it was a big space. It was 11 metres long with a wooden floor and a small gallery space as well. My aim in starting a gallery, I would never have done it if I was a practicing artist. I don't believe that you can do those two things. So I'm quite rare, I think, as somebody that wanted to start a dealer gallery. So that's why it's quite lovely to talk about this, because I started collecting art when I sold my own work, and I had a dealer in Auckland and a dealer in Wellington, exhibited for 12 years, had a solo show at the Christchurch Art Gallery. And I used to go to parties, and I can remember a friend coming up to me and grabbing me and say, why'd you stop painting? And so in a way, that was the history. And having worked in a gallery like the CSA, I was very aware of how things functioned, how things worked. And running my own dealer gallery, I could do what I wanted to do. And my aim was, I took nobody away from this gallery. I had a very direct policy of not approaching anybody that had representation in the city. And I stuck with that. One of my most intimate friends is a very successful Australian artist who lives in Sydney. There was no way she was going to leave this gallery due to her loyalty to be represented by her best friend. And so I really stuck with that. And I showed a range of mature artists and emerging artists, and probably one of the interesting things is my interest in ceramics. And the Christchurch Art Gallery next year are going to do a show on a woman called Cheryl Lucas. She has won a $100,000 grant from Creative New Zealand, and they are going to do a solo show of her work, and I showed her in my gallery. Probably 2 years after the gallery closed, I was approached by somebody at Otago University, and this thesis was written about the gallery. And I just thought I'd show you this. Probably one of the most memorable shows, and people can just have a look at that and hand it around. And it's relevant because here we have Nucleus by Phil Price down here. And I had an exhibition of Phil Price's work in my gallery when he was an emerging artist. Phil Price today is probably virtually unseen here. He has a workshop here in town. There is this work here, and there are other public works around. Not somebody that's showing in dealer galleries anymore. You know, the value of these works is pretty astronomical. But it's very interesting that in the early part of his career there, you know, I was showing him. And I was always very interested to exhibit woman artists and making sure that for those that perhaps were committed with children or whatever, that they had an existing career during that time.
Great. I really like the concrete memories where you've got Phil Price's Nucleus on that corner, and then just over on this corner here, you've actually got a Wayne Yule work.
Yeah.
And one of the first places that I saw Wayne Yule exhibit was in 6403. So I feel like that might be quite a good segue.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Next up is Helen Calder, who set up and ran 6403 on Manchester Street.
All right, okay, so I'm not sure what number Manchester Street it is right here, but in the car park just over the road there was a building, and The building in which 6403 was housed was number 117 Manchester Street. And the reason I say that is it has a bit of a history before I had it as a gallery. It was one of the venues for Gridlocked. Now, you may not know about Gridlocked, but it was a project set up by Tessa Giblin, who was at Canterbury School of Fine Art and is now currently a curator at the University of Edinburgh. Forgotten the name of the gallery. Anyway, she's up there. But she set up this project where artists could... she facilitated artists into projects in window spaces all the way around Christchurch. And sometimes they were in odd places that you just came across. In fact, there was a lovely quote, and I don't know who said it, but it was art to stub your toe on. And I thought that's a good way of describing it, because they were in odd places that you wouldn't expect to see artworks. Whole range of artists. I think I counted up about 28, 30 artists that she had in these spaces over a period of 2 years, 2002 to 2004. And in most cases, she only used a space once because it was then needed for something else. But the 117 window was used for 7 projects. And so it had kind of become sort of known for this. In fact, people used to go into the bike shop on the corner and say, "When's the next art going to be in there?" They were so entranced by it. So it was a great, it wasn't stubbing your toe in that case, but it got people interested in art. It was ground floor, that's why I think people engaged with it who otherwise wouldn't engage with art. So the reason I say that is that I was offered the opportunity to have that space as a whole. It was quite a big space. I had a studio upstairs further along on Manchester Street. And Julia Morrison and I had been teaching together at the School of Fine Arts for about a year, and one of the things that we realised is that there weren't a lot of opportunities for artists outside Christchurch to show their work here, and we decided that that might be an opportunity. That, and also there were a lot of really talented students at the School of Fine Art we could see coming through. So neither of us are business people. It was probably good that we weren't, in the sense that we just bowled in and did it. Our primary focus was really to bring artists that we knew outside Christchurch into Christchurch, and also these younger artists that were coming through Canterbury that we thought were worth showing. It also was kind of an artist-run space, but with a difference. We funded it by selling, and the funds went straight back into covering the shows. When we started it, we called it 6403 simply because that was the New Zealand phone code and the area code. But it was a bit of serendipity that we closed 5 years later on our 64th show. And I think we both got to the point where we said, you know, somebody's got to take this over or we're just going to burn out, because we were both still trying to carry on our own practices. We had hoped that somebody would step in and say, yay, but that's fine, they didn't, and we closed up. But during that time of that 5 years and 64 shows, we did manage to actually make ends meet, which was quite unusual. And also we brought a lot of younger artists to people's notice. So people like Miranda Parks had their first show at 64. Wayne Yule first showed with us. He'd been in Wellington and shown there, but the first time was showing in Christchurch was with us. So there were a lot of artists, Andre Hemmer, a lot of them just started with us and have gone on to have significant careers. Now, I don't know if I've covered off the whole of it, but there were 22 artists that were represented. But in addition to that, we often had visiting artists and we had curated shows. I think one of the first shows opened was a curated show by Yuk King Tan. There were 8 artists in that show, all from Auckland, and it was one of 3 curated shows with external people that we had for memory. And so there were solo shows, group shows, curated shows, and that was how we operated for 5 years.
So shall we wander back using the controlled crossing and assemble outside of what will soon be Hot Lunch?
Excellent.
Maybe Lee and Liam can lead the way.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Physics Finally, we have Lee Richardson and Liam Kriegsman talking about their new gallery space, Hot Lunch.
Kia ora, everybody. Cook Island Language Week. That's why I think Lee is the drums. I'm Lee.
I'm Liam.
This is Liam. And we're also missing Millie Galbraith. She's the third person.
The facilitator.
Yeah. So I studied, I finished 2 years ago at Islam, graphic design. And
I did sculpture, graduated last year.
And then Millie's in her honours year of art history at the moment. So that's like the sort of main facilitators. I guess for me, I came here from Invercargill to study fine arts. And I was really taken, I guess, by the physics room initially. Like, that was like, you know, when I first came here, would have been 2015 was my first year here. And then sort of, you know, seeing that, and then it was that connection to like, I know there's this thing called the North Projects, go and like check that out. And just being really kind of taken with what they were able to do. You know, it's like, oh, these guys just did it for themselves. It was really interesting. And that was kind of like, wow, this is cool. And I guess the programming was awesome.
Like, it was for me, it was like the first time I realized, like, oh, you can do that. You can actually move outside of institutions without, you can build your own institutions.
And they also had really good posters as well.
Yeah,
that was another thing.
Game was really strong.
Yeah, their posters were awesome. Those big A2s. So stuff like that. It was probably. So I guess, like, from my perspective, doing this artist run space for me, it was North Projects when North Projects shut down. So that's like, I think I might have been in my second or third year, and I was like, oh, we're all cool to do something then. But like, of course, like studying and all that sort of stuff in the time, and it would have been nice to kind of come in on the legs of that sort of. So it's been in the works for a long time anyway, thinking about the idea and looking at lots of spaces, all that kind of stuff. We had some spaces that were going to happen, and then people pulled out on us, and then so it's been a bit of a mission to kind of get to this point in terms of finding a space. But when this came up, we talked to the guys here and they said we can use it for a year. We signed on with them. They're helping out sort of sponsoring shows as well. So they're sort of coming on as a sponsor, which is awesome. Following in what was happening in the 90s, you know, what into the early 2000s. And then
I guess like we're coming in at where there's been, like, I guess a lapse a little bit. Like, there hasn't been an established sort of go-to place for emerging artists. And then what there has been is gap filler stuff, which is, like, useful, but it has been, like, a brick and mortar, like, go-to joint for emerging artists. And that's, I guess, what we're looking to fill.
And I guess the idea that we're really interested in as well is that, you know, we're going to treat this as a year-long project, but then just hopefully plant that little bit that something can come in kind of quite quickly afterwards, hopefully, that can sort of something else.
And there already is. It's like other, there's 013, which is, I'm still not too sure what that is, but that's, you know, that's another,
something,
there's something.
And I guess for us, we're also excited with Rise of Paludo as well, that we can be, you know, working with a similar community of people and having those, that sort of conversation as well, we're really interested in. We've sort of got like a bit of a wider team as well at the moment, just trying to build on the connections that we've got and people that we're interested in. So from my design background, so there's going to be, I guess, that heavy ephemera hopefully left from this place.
Lots of posters,
stickers. You know, that we're kind of trying to...
Merchandise.
But sort of having, you know, having that little bit of that footprint that can be sort of that trail at the end, and works with Luke Shaw as well. So I guess from his perspective, running some sort of sound program that can happen in between shows, which we think, you know, since the Oracle hasn't been around in a long time, so something that can come in and for that part of the community as well, which we think is really important. But I guess we kind of just
pay the rent.
we're just here to, like, you know, put our friends on as well. That's really important to us. And I think that was the thing going through art school. It was like, oh, what's that? Where can we show here? Where's that next bit? And then, you know, our friends, what we think is great. And we want to be able to facilitate that.
And it's like really nice to hear from, you know, people who have talked today about like those, the friendships and the names and stuff. And like, all the things that we've heard about in passing or like through Macmillan Brown, like looking through the catalogs and stuff, it's nice to think that maybe we could be part of that history. Like it's quite nice.
Yeah. And just hearing stuff from today, it's making us really excited that we're somehow
things that we're not aware
part of this line, this timeline,
a tradition,
even though this whole era is so different to what it might be like. But I think bringing it back.
Yeah, we're hoping we can drive the property prices down. I think is our main goal.
But
lower the tone.
Yeah. But that's sort of what we're trying to do, and But yeah, I guess we're guessing as well. You know, it's a thing. It's just like I guess a little bit that I forgot, I guess, kind of from that as well, is like, for me personally, I don't necessarily know too many artists at a similar level or designers or as in my sort of age group or just out of art school from the likes of Auckland or Wellington, Dunedin. And so we're really interested in the idea of how do we get that these people connected with each other, because, you know, it'd be great to just be able to go to Auckland and just be like, yeah, da 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 da, but I feel like I don't know anyone at a similar level to me. And so it's kind of, hopefully this can be a little bit of a beacon that, you know, someone can come down and do a show here and then instantly they've met, you know, people from Ireland and be, hey, let's do something somewhere else. And that's, I'm really excited for those crossovers and those connections and what can happen. I guess, but what can happen from that, which I think for me, I'd love to be able to, you know, just be able to go to Wellington and be like, oh, Johnny, like, should we do something cool? But I don't know those people. So hopefully this can be a starting point for those conversations.
It's like, even through lockdown, I guess, as you live through Instagram to see what, you know, you vaguely know who people are through what you, the work you see on the Instagram and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not like a meaningful connection. So I'm looking forward to, establishing real connections with real people. Fangirling through the...
and it's funny, I guess, because for us, we see, like, we have Instagram that we just see so much stuff that's happening, which is great. It's awesome. Like, I can see what's happening in like Auckland tonight or whatever, but then we don't necessarily know that, you know, there's not the connection there at the same time.
So when's the first show open?
Oh yeah, plug. Yeah, 21st of August, Christian Lamont. So he's first up, which will be exciting. 6 p.m.
6 p.m.
227 High Street, Christian Lamont, 21st of August.
Thank you so much. Wind it up.
Cool. Cheers.
Thank you so much to all of wonderful speakers today. I think it's been a really nice range of like looking forwards as well as looking back and seeing these really great parallels that I didn't know really existed explicitly. I hope that everyone enjoyed hearing those stories and hearing some of the tidbits and hot takes. Don't miss the opening year.
Yeah, please come.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
That was Louise Palmer, Helen Calder, Grant Banbury, Lee Richardson, and Liam Kriegsman talking about their involvement with art galleries in the High Street area. Don't forget that this is the last weekend to see Kiosk Director's Commentary by Eddie Clemens. And if you're looking for something to do this Sunday afternoon, we would love to see you at ICAP, Total Recall, a panel of past Kiosk artists who will join us to speak about their work and touch on their experiences and the influence of the Kiosk on their art practice. Thank you for listening, and tune in next month on Friday, 18 September at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art Not Science. Mā te wā!
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Signtech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.